Ladies and gentlemen, podcasting since 2005, you're listening to Gamertag Radio with your host, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
Welcome to Gamertag Radio episode 1106. This is your host, Danny Pena, speaking here. And guess what? We have a podcast exclusive, y'all. Podcast exclusive. And we have an interview with Mojang about Minecraft Dungeons. Yes, the dev team had him here on the show. And we had a great, great, fantastic interview for about a good 45 minutes or so. About the history about Minecraft Dungeons, how was it behind the scenes working in the game? And there's some cool, cool stories that I was like, okay, I was not expecting that at all. And I think you guys will love it. Plus, we talked about how was it for them getting, you know, finding out that they got 10 million players now in the game. And also, we talked about the updates since launch until now, plus the brand new update, the biggest one yet that just came out today. By the time you guys hear this recording, it's probably going to be out worldwide already. So I can't wait for you guys to listen to this. It's a fantastic interview, one of my favorite interviews so far. It was really, really cool. And I can't wait to hear your feedback about this. Highly recommended to hear it. But first, head over to GamertagRadio.com, post your comments and feedback, listen to our past episodes. You could also find us on any podcast app. Just search for Gamertag Radio. Make sure to follow us, subscribe, and also post your review. It'll help us get discovered out there. So the more you review us, the better it is, man. Also, if you'd like to be part of our fan mail episode, here's how you can contact us.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
All right, so let's go straight to the interview with Mojang about Minecraft Dungeons.
This is a Gamertag Radio exclusive.
Hi, everyone. My name is Måns Olsson. I'm the game director on Minecraft Dungeons.
And hello, everyone. My name is David Nishagen. I'm the executive producer for Minecraft Dungeons.
All right. Well, first of all, congratulations. I know you guys hit 10 million players. Was that like recent, like a couple days ago, right? Or a couple weeks ago or so? Let me tell you, I've been playing this game nonstop, actually during quarantine. I have three games that I've been playing a lot. It's been Animal Crossing, Streets of Rage 4, and Minecraft Dungeons. Those are the three games I've been playing a lot during quarantine. So thank you for releasing a very cool game. But let's talk about the early stages when you guys started working on this game. Like, how you guys came up with the idea? Because this is like a totally different genre for you guys.
Yeah, it sure is. So it started as we had a team that was looking for a new project. And around that time, we were thinking about what game to make for the Nintendo 3DS. We actually wanted to make a 3DS game to start with. And Jens, our chief creative officer, and a couple of other people at the company were talking about this idea of a dungeon crawler at the time, because it's a genre that we love. We love playing games like this. And we thought that Minecraft was kind of a natural fit in that you do all this delving into caves, finding monsters, finding treasure. And so we started looking at that, and then as we were working on it, we realized that it'd be fun to play it on a lot more platforms. And around that time, the Switch also came out, and we figured it was a great fit for all of the platforms and sort of scoping it up and making it a big multiplayer dungeon crawler.
Hmm. Yeah. And for you, David?
Yeah, I mean... I was not there during the first 3DS part of it, and I love that piece of the story. I mean, who in their really sane mind would design a game specifically? I love the 3DS, I always have, but it is a very, very constrained platform. And as you say, the Switch came out and the other platforms are growing bigger and stronger, etc. But what I leaned into when I first saw the game in its early version, so to speak, it was like, this is a fun game to play together. Right? There is something there about, you know, fighting monsters together, working together, helping each other out in a cooperative way that felt like it could have this sort of magic potential. Mm-hmm. And I'm super happy that we sort of leaned into that. And I think the team and Mons have done a great job in making that sort of cooperative experience really good.
Yeah. Was there any time that you guys thought that this was not going to be a big hit? Because 10 million players is a lot. It's a lot of people, man. You know, so was there any like thoughts right before the game come out? Like, man, do you think this is going to be a huge success? Like a Minecraft game?
I mean, it's always scary to release a new game. Mm-hmm. We initially, when we started working on it, it was a really big ask of the team, I think, to take on this. It's the first internally developed Minecraft spin-off. Or it started that way. It wasn't the first to come out, but it was the first to start being developed. And it's a scary thing to do because we have a big community of very dedicated, passionate players who know a lot about the game, often more than we do. To kind of approach that and hope that you make something that feels worthwhile and that is true to Minecraft and that's also just a fun game, that's definitely scary. I think it was scary all up until the point where we started demoing the game. So when we took it to E3 and showed it behind the scenes to journalists, and then primarily when we went to Gamescom and showed it to players, we had kind of lines of players lining up to play the game at the consoles. And that's when we, I don't want to say felt safe. That's never true. But that's when we started realizing that maybe this will work,
Yeah. And I think also you guys probably gotten people that have never played Minecraft and this is like their first Minecraft game. And I'm one of them, So because my nephews, they love Minecraft, right? And I tried to play it and I was like, okay, this game is not for me. But I feel like playing Minecraft Dungeons, I was like, okay, this is for me, right? And I've been hooked ever since. So you probably are surprised probably that there's probably a whole crowd that have never played Minecraft before. This is like their first one for them, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Minecraft in itself, it's such a magnificently large and wonderful game, right? It's huge. It has sold so many copies, I can't quite remember, right? It's in the hundreds of millions. And if our sort of job is to find new game experience and then try to make an interesting experience for people just like you, like who are not really into Minecraft but looking for something else. Mm-hmm. How can we make that happen and still make it very, very Minecraft? Because Minecraft Dungeons is very, very Minecraft, even though you don't do the sort of creative world building in an open world, procedurally generated sandbox mm-hmm. that Minecraft is. But it still feels very Minecraft when you play it. Mm-hmm.
I think this idea, I mean, we felt fairly safe in the assumption that we'd get some Minecraft players to try this new Minecraft game. But the idea of can we get players who like this style of game, who are perhaps like enjoying what this game brings to the table, can we bring them into the Minecraft franchise? That was a question we didn't have such a solid answer to, and we didn't know whether that was going to work, but fortunately for us it has, and that's obviously what we were hoping for.
And what were like the biggest challenges working on this game for you and the team?
Oh, there has been a lot. I mean, initially it was never started as a very large team and with a very big huge product vision of what we're going to do. It was started in the same way, in the same sort of indie roots that started Minecraft from the beginning, building stuff, gradually with super talented, passionate team members. And then if you zoom out and look at the sort of blunt reality, all right, so we're actually literally targeting, you know, PC, PlayStation, Nintendo Switch, Xbox. We're doing this. Oh, oops. Okay, looks like we got new generation consoles coming out here as well. So the support we can get from our partners at Sony and Xbox, they're going to pay a lot of attention to the next generation consoles. And how do we, all of that complexity in a team that in its heart is this passionate team of almost, well, very experienced and very talented, but indies at heart, right? Mm-hmm. I think that was the biggest challenge. And then you take, like, we need to meet these requirements. We need to pass the Sony TRCs or the Xbox requirements. And, oh, what, we can't just ship the game? Because we think it's good now, or we think we have external requirements. And that's a mindset that's slightly challenging when Mojang from the beginning have had the ability to, we build things and we release it using our own launcher straight out to players without, you know, it makes the focus so much on yourself being accountable to making a great user experience. Now then using slightly more restricted platforms like consoles, there's other gates and balances and checks you need to meet as well. And that's a challenge for, like, an indie, passionate, super fast moving mindset.
Mm. What about you, Mons?
I definitely agree that releasing on all these platforms at once is a big technical hurdle, and certainly something that many of us haven't done before, at least not on this scale. So that's that is probably the biggest one. From a game design perspective, I think it's just this overall, like, constantly present question of, does it feel like Minecraft? Is it true to what vanilla Minecraft is? And can we satisfy Minecraft players in terms of lore, in terms of all of those things? Mm-hmm. It's been scary at times, because we're doing some new things and we're pushing some boundaries when it comes to Minecraft world building. I think it's resonated pretty well with players, but that wasn't always a given, I think. So that has been a challenge.
And where were you guys when you heard you got 10 million players already in the game? were you at home, working, or what?
Well, the combination, right? Working from home.
Yes, yes.
I think if there was one biggest challenge of everything, it was, of course, when the whole, COVID-19 hit. And that was in Sweden then. It was in March, right?
Yes.
And then I think our release date was in April. And we were like, how do we even bring home computers? How do we do this thing? Even with all that support that we got from like Mojang and Microsoft, et cetera, and partners Sony and Nintendo as well to do this, it's still like, how can we overcome this change of sitting together and just, you know, having the idea generation at the coffee machine and helping each other out face to face to now sitting at home and trying to work from home? Mm-hmm. That was one of the major hurdles and challenges.
Yeah, I think obviously finding out that we had 10 million players was fantastic. speaking for myself, I mean, I would have been at home working on the Nether update because. We want to take time to celebrate victories, but we also want to make sure that we deliver ongoing content to our players. And that's not something that just ends when you ship a game.
It feels like, yes, a celebration, but also like the pressure is pretty high now because there's a lot of people that like the game, they've been playing the game, that also support the game. So has it been pressure for you guys? Like, the pressure has been high because of that too, for you and the team?
For sure. I mean, we've worked hard to make sure that we keep as constant a stream of updates as possible, mm-hmm. Going out to players. And that's also because that's how we would want to see the game handled as players. I mean, mm-hmm. most of us play a lot of other games in our spare times, and we have the same sort of expectations and hopes for products that players would have.
And I can chime in there a little bit. It was never a given that it would become such a big thing. It was this, I won't say it was a total surprise either, because obviously it has a couple of the sort of the recipe is there. It's a mm-hmm. it's a charming genre, and it's a strong brand, and it's a really good team, so it should work. But then I think it did a little bit better than we expected, to be honest, mm-hmm. and that has also added a bit of pressure, not as much being put on us externally from someone else, but as Mons mentions, like, okay, we have a lot of players, we have a lot of fans, we want to try to do things, you know, right.
You know, I have a couple questions about the updates since launch and now, and one of them is like, I know you guys added a crossplay. I think that's wonderful, because I have friends and family that don't have an Xbox, so it's good to play other people from different platforms and stuff. So why is there no, or why they you guys haven't launched the cross progression? Because I'm a huge fan of, well, before COVID, but I love traveling and everything, right? So when I travel, I always take my Nintendo Switch. So a game like this, I would love to go and take my Switch with me, but also I want to take all the saves and everything that I have from my Xbox version. So why is there any update about that? Like, are you guys planning to release in the future, or what?
David, wanna?
Yes, I can take that. Yeah. Yes, we're definitely looking into it. Obviously, that's one of the things that we really want to do. Originally, we wanted to have crossplay at launch day, but it's a really, really complicated thing to build. It's like there's so many, even if you get a lot of help from the partners and with Sony, Nintendo, and Xbox, mm-hmm. it's still this web of complexity that takes a lot of time to get right. And it takes a lot of time to both make sure you check all the boxes and make everybody happy, but also that it's a good user experience. And the sort of cross-platform progression where you can carry on like what you have done, at least on one character, that's a similar hurdle. It's harder than you'd think. So we have been working on it for some time, and we're doing good progress. I can't say any dates or anything.
Okay, that's
fine. But we are actively working on it.
All right, that's good. At least that's an update. That's good. That's really, really good. But let's talk about
that we want to do.
Oh,
for sure.
Let's talk about just the updates that you guys have been doing since the launch of the game. I know you guys added daily trials, new levels. Let's talk about that. Who wants to talk about that?
Yeah, first. I can talk about that.
Yeah.
So, and one thing that has been key to us in order to deliver these updates is to combine the work of multiple teams, which I think maybe isn't so visible to players, but it's been really important to us. So we have the team in Stockholm that's the core team working on the game. We were very focused on shipping, and then we have a development partner, a company called Double 11 in the UK, that have been working with us on the base game, but also on a lot of the content for some of these DLCs. Mm-hmm. So working together with them, we were able to sort of reach the cadence that we wanted. Specifically on the features, I think an important thing to us has been to make sure that alongside the paid DLCs we launch, we also launch significant free updates to our players. we really want to make sure that even if you don't pay for additional DLC as you play the game, you get an ongoing stream of new content or new features. And that just keeps the game alive and makes it more interesting. So the daily trials specifically, they were definitely just that. So that's something that we were hoping to add as soon as possible after launch, as a method to bring something new to the game every day. We wanted to have it these kind of wonky, if you will, rule sets of you spawn 5 pets instead of spawning 1 pet, or all of your arrows are fireworks arrows, so there's explosions all over the screen, and kind of make the gameplay itself the reward to some extent. Obviously, we know that's not what every player wants, so we also made sure to add some rewards in there, something to chase that was exclusive to the daily trials. But that was kind of the idea behind them. Similarly, the vendors that we updated in a big patch came out of a similar sort of idea of how do we want to change the game to make it something that will last for longer, where the players have a little bit more agency over what items they encounter.
Cool.
And I mean, the sort of DLCs, we try to focus them around like an area. And as more sense, I think the most important thing is that combine this. Here's something you can pay for if you want to, and here's something that's free for everyone. So there is always an interest to just go back to the game and check it out. And we try to theme these so they made sense together to be combined. And as with them, the paid DLCs is more focused on expanding the game world with new biomes, as we say in Minecraft language, like so, mm-hmm. adding jungle or adding like winter and ice biomes or mountain areas. And then as we get, you know, better and better, as we do more of these content, we get better and better at it. So we've added more and more puzzly elements as we found that, hey, this is kind of cool and fun to do, and it's something that players want. So having that continuous growth of both like the world, the features, and in combination with these free features and content, I think it's worked out really well and is continuing to do so.
Yeah, that's the first thing I do. That's the first thing I do always is check out the trials every day. That's cool.
A final quick thing on that topic is that obviously we want to listen to player feedback as well. So when we launched the game, I mean, we had an idea of what the first couple of updates were going to be, because it takes a while to develop them, and you have to work on them for quite a while. Mm-hmm. But we wanted to also make sure that we saw what happened at the launch of the game and see how players reacted, what features were they missing, were they running low on arrows, you know, all of those kinds of things. And then integrate as much as possible of that feedback into our updates.
You know, one cool idea that I was thinking about the other day, I was like, man, it would be cool if they could add something like a weekend or time limited event that the community will get involved. Maybe you have to get a certain amount of kills or a certain amount of loot dropped, and maybe we'll unlock something, you know, rare in the game or something like that. You know, do you see something to do? Do you think guys would do something like that in the future of like just like special events or some type like that for Minecraft Dungeons? I think it would be awesome to get people more involved together as a community. What do you think?
It's certainly something that we've thought a little bit about. I'm hesitant to promise features at this point because again, they take time to develop, and we have to prioritize between a list of all these things that we want to do, and that list is long. So there are a lot of things that we'd love to add to the game. Mm-hmm. I can safely say that for me, that would be one of them, something along those lines. But whether it's going to show up or exactly when, that's not something that I can say now.
No, just a request, that's all.
I think it's really cool.
I can chime in a little bit there. We did an experiment. We tried to see what we could do for Lost Halloween. We had like an in-game event called Spooky Fall, I think. Mm-hmm. And there was like some unique things, unique challenges, unique versions of daily trials, so to speak. And there was some unique themed rewards you could get. And that seemed to resonate quite well with players. Players seemed to like that. And we did a similar thing for over the holidays. We did something winter themed or Christmas themed, perhaps. And then tried to tie it a little bit together in a theme. So it made a bit of sense. And that also worked. We saw positive feedback on it. And personally, I also love that sort of thing, right? It's so fun to go in and have this. Here's a clear goal and I can choose to do it. But we want to be mindful so it doesn't become like a mandatory thing that you have a real fear of missing out, that you feel that it's a negative motivation. I'd love to think of these sort of things as a positive reminder that, hey, here's a really fun core gameplay. You just enjoy playing the game. And here's a bit of extra just to get you back in.
Yeah, totally agree. But it's good. It's good to see that people are really into this stuff. So that's really cool. Really cool. But let's talk about the new update. This is the biggest update for you guys ever in the game. So what is it? What's new in the with this update that came out today? Actually,
yeah, that's a long list of things.
Yeah.
How long time do you have? Yeah.
So kind of splitting it up into. What's in the free update and what's in the paid DLC a little bit. We have a free update where we're launching a massive new feature for us called Ancient Hunts, which is something that I wanted to do for a very long time. We have a lot of people that have worked very hard on it. I think it's just a very fun thing. Mm-hmm. And it's these procedurally generated missions that are kind of stitched together and weaves in and out of the Nether and the overworld. And then you don't get regular loot drops. You only get gold, which is a new purely in-game currency, and these new items called gilded items, which I guess we can talk about in a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then alongside of that, we've also rebalanced Apocalypse Plus, which is our top-end difficulty. So we've stretched it out and made some changes to make it a little bit more accessible, a little bit easier, while also gating progress so that you have to defeat bosses to progress through Apocalypse Plus. And together, these two systems, I think, combine and give you a more interesting end game, kind of more interesting rewards to find, more things to chase down. There's a lot of player agency in how you get into these ancient hunts because you sacrifice items with combinations of runes and you invest your enchantment points. Mm-hmm. And then the other part is the pay DLC, which is six all new missions set in the Nether. And in those missions, there are also lots of new gear, new artifacts to find. Some of my favorite artifacts, personally. I think all of the new four that we're launching in this update are really fun to use. And we've really tried to make sure to enable a bigger, more diverse set of character builds in this update. So the new gear and artifacts are one thing. Another part of that puzzle is rebalancing existing ones. And then we've added a lot of new enchantments. I think it's 12 or 13, something along that line.
Yeah, 13.
Mm-hmm. To really scale up what you can do, which types of playstyles you can have.
I think that one of my personal favorites there is that this is one of the areas where we can actually see how players play, and we see that we had a sort of a vision of what sort of archetypes people would tend to gravitate to, where players would like to. We think here's a ranged sort of, we want to make sure you can play as a ranged character or as a tank character, sort of the standard ways of playing. But one of them was like, my favorite is like pets. And I think we added a lot this time, a lot of both interesting enchantments and then balancing and changing up gear and artifacts. So you can actually equip yourself now to be being like a beastmaster, having a big bunch of pets running around and feeling really powerful. That's how I prefer to play. So I'm super happy about both doing it right now, but also on the path there. This is something that's not quite viable, and now we make it viable. I love that sort of thing. And then also being able to put that in this very, very rich new context of like, previous DLCs have been like 3 new levels. This has 6 new levels, so it's like twice as big. And the Ancient Hunt system is... I love it and I hate it. It's this risk-reward thing. Do I actually want to sacrifice this item? Yeah, I do. And then you get a better reward in the end.
I know you mentioned about the difficulty, because there's people that will play the game, finish the game, and then move on, right? And there's some, like me, that will continue and play. Now is the end game. Now it's like, okay, what else, what other type of loot we could get? And we'll play it in a more difficult level. Difficulty, right? But you mentioned that with this update, you made it a little bit accessible and easier for players. Why the change? Because I feel like I love the challenge, you know. So,
Yeah. Okay. Let me be a bit more specific on that, because I could dive into a lot of details. But
yeah.
Basically, we saw that with the old Apocalypse Plus, we had designed it explicitly to create an almost impossible challenge. The idea, the design goal was for very few players to ever reach the highest Apocalypse Plus 20 difficulty. Most players should stop somewhere along the way, or kind of hit the soft cap somewhere along the way and feel like there is something to strive for. There is the next difficulty beyond the horizon. And while that did work for some players, for other players, they found ways to get all the way to the end very quickly by running our shorter and easier missions, for example, like Archhaven, which is a secret mission in the game. Mm-hmm. And then our design goal of this should be almost overly difficult created a problem. Instead, it was a little bit too hard, and players would only run certain missions that were the ones that were easy enough to play at that difficulty. And we want players to be able to enjoy all of the different content in the game, to feel like it's a legitimate strategy to vary up which missions you play. And so we lowered the overall top end difficulty a little bit, reduced the damage of the mobs, reduced their health, reduced the movement speed. But at the same time, we introduced this restriction that to progress through it, you have to play boss missions, which are often some of the hardest in the game. So to unlock plus 22, which is the last unlock step in the new progression, you have to complete 7 different boss missions in the game. If you don't own any DLC, that's all of the various boss missions. They have to play all of them to get to plus 22. And that should still be a real challenge. Then separately from that, we have the Ancient Hunts. And the Ancient Hunts have... sort of randomly generated constellations of enemies based on the items that you input into an Ancient Hunt. And that means you can see all new constellations of enemies you have never seen before. So suddenly you might get an enemy from the jungle DLC, like the Leapleaf, this big hulking monster, together with the Iceologer from the Creeping Winter DLC. Mm-hmm. And when you start seeing new combinations like that, suddenly your old strategies don't quite work out the same way. And it turns out that when you get these random constellations of enemies with slightly different play patterns, including the new Nether enemies, suddenly it gets quite hard. So I definitely don't think it's a cakewalk to play Ancient Hunts at Apocalypse Plus 25. I think it's still a real challenge.
Okay,
but
good.
We've rebalanced it so that more builds are viable to do it with. You don't have to play the one cookie cutter strategy. It's still hard.
All right, it's definitely still hard. Good. I'm good with that. Now, what makes this new levels different than the previous levels that is in the game already?
Should I go again?
You take it away. You're the expert on the difference here.
I mean, so all of the Nether missions, the new paid missions, are highly procedural in the sense that we've made them from sort of small building blocks, and we have many of them, so you get lots of side paths and lots of like little interesting swirly pathways, things like that. And then the ancient hunts, they use those same environments partly, and they also go into environments that you already know from the overworld, and some brand new environments that are also set in the overworld but aren't part of any other missions that you can play. You only get them in the ancient hunts. And so you get all of these different environments, and you play through three of them at a time. So you go through one, you go through a portal, you get the next one, and then you go through a portal, and then you get to the next one after that. And along the way, you may find these doors with a blue light glowing out of them, which is where the ancient mobs can be found. And you won't always get an ancient mob there, but you do sometimes. And when you do, that should be a real challenge. Some of them are easier than others. Some of them are incredibly difficult, actually, and kind of a little bit frustrating, which I think is fine, as long as you have the right variety. And they're kind of how we think about bosses in this update. So unlike our previous DLCs, there's not one big final boss. Instead, we have these 15 or so ancient mobs that are really, really powerful enemies that are quite tricky to beat. And when you defeat them, you get gilded gear, which is the best items that, I mean, they're the best items that you can get in the game.
Good, good. I saw David smiling when you were mentioning about these are some tough levels to tough boss.
Yeah, I mean, some of that. I have a couple of these ancient mobs. I just, my strategies are like, they're useless. I just can't beat them. They're like, some of them, I got it down, right? They suit me and my playstyle. And yeah. And that's sort of the beauty of this ancient hunt system, that you can, to some extent, direct a little bit what you're going to see and encounter. So by sacrificing different items and different types, you can sort of tweak, not with a guarantee, but you can tweak the numbers to your advantage, or usually for me a disadvantage then, because I, I'd also like to chime in with one more thing regarding like the new levels and the new, the sort of world. It's beautiful. It's absolutely stunningly beautiful. Every time I start up the game, I find something that makes my jaw drop, because, and I've been playing this for some time, right? We've been developing this for some time. There is so much in what Mons mentions as well. It's much more procedural. So it's these puzzle pieces that are put together a bit on the fly. And some of these puzzle pieces that you don't see, you see them rarely. And then it feels so rich and so diverse in all these environments. And the Nether is such an iconically cool environment in Minecraft. And the dungeon's interpretation is absolutely gorgeous. I love it.
Yeah, we're almost done here. Go ahead. Okay. Go ahead.
I was just going to say a lot of credit should go to the vanilla team as well. They did an amazing job updating the Nether and introducing all these very cool biomes in the recent update of vanilla Minecraft. And so we've had a great source of inspiration to pull from and reinterpret for dungeons.
Yeah. So how was it for you guys to get the right music for those, for each levels and the situation where there's like bosses? Because it's sometimes it could get a little stressful, you know, hearing that the music going like, you know, dark or kind of crazy when it's like a boss battle, you know. So how was it finding like the right track for that, for each of those moments in the game for you guys? Because it's really cool, the music.
I think a big part of that is just we have a fantastic audio team with our sound director and in-house composer and in-house sound designer. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that work has been made very independently by that team. I think they know their craft very well. They've made a lot of the sort of ambiences and sound effects and whatnot for vanilla Minecraft. They have a very strong idea about how to interpret that into dungeons, to make it scary, to make it
stressful,
moody, intense, and stressful. Yeah, for sure. So a lot of credit to them for that.
Yeah. No, it's really cool. So is there new music for the new DLC too, or no?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
Oh. Every DLC has a quite rich tapestry of music. And it's also fun with the audio team that they're super talented and super passionate. And when you hear them spin off and go into their like beast mode, what do you call it? When they're just being genius and they spin off and, I know who we should work with to do this, give this specific feeling. And they have these partners that they can work with as well and align with. So we have some great partners that have also done some music and atmosphere work for the Nether. And I mean, we try to put up all of the soundtracks for all the DLCs in the game up on the various music streaming services. So definitely go and check it out on Spotify or Apple Music or whatever service you use.
Yeah, it's good vibes for sure.
If you search for Flames of the Nether, that should all be there. It's a really lengthy soundtrack, actually. There's a lot of new music produced for this.
So I'm going to wrap it up here, but I have one more question for you guys. And also a tip for me, because I'm always playing, and I feel like sometimes I'm not getting the right loot, so I need some tips. How can I get better loot in the game? And then I have one more question.
You should not ask me. I'm such a miserable. I'm in your boat, right? I'm sitting there, cool, I got something. I got a unique. It's useless.
Yes, yes.
Happens to me all the time.
Yeah.
I think with the gilded loot, so the gilded items are versions of commons or rares or uniques, but with an extra built-in enchantment on top of that. So that's what makes them so powerful. And which ancient mobs you encounter during an ancient hunt is something that you can control by being specific and mindful about what you put into that ancient hunt as we started. And that was also part of what we wanted to do with this update. We wanted to give players some agency. So now they can sort of set up their own mission where I want to play and find this specific ancient mob because I know that it's likely to drop these specific gilded items. So if you want to find that fighter's bindings or if you want to find an axe, then you have a method of increasing your chances of doing so.
All right, good to know. Now, my last question is, since you guys started working on this project, what has been like the favorite part for you working on this, on Minecraft Dungeons?
What? I couldn't quite hear you there.
Oh, yeah. What was it? Cut. Okay, sorry, maybe it's breaking up. Now, what has been like your favorite part working on this project since you started working on Minecraft Dungeons for you guys? Was there any cool moments or feature or anything in the game that you're like, man, this is, I'm proud of this. I'm proud of this, you know?
There's a couple, I think. I mean, starting out and just like doing the, when we started prototyping it, just thinking of like, we just take Minecraft and we just kind of spin the camera up and make it third person and seeing how that plays. Was very interesting and all the early developments from then on and figuring out like how does enchantments from Minecraft translate into this game and things like that. And then I think a big one is first seeing players enjoy it. And that kind of, it happened gradually. And the very first thing was we invited a few select people to our office to play the game. From then, we did the E3 demo and the Gamescom demo, and at Gamescom, just you know, seeing lines of actual real people playing your game, having fun with it, some of them getting back into the line and wanting to play again, that's an amazing feeling. It's certainly not something that I'd experienced in that way before, and it's a lot of fun.
That's awesome. And what about you, David?
Yeah, I share that moment with the first time we were so nervous and we had so high ambitions of what we wanted to show on the sort of the show floor, demo show floor. Mm-hmm. And we put in so much effort in trying to get something great to show. And then you have all this sort of stress. And then you go in there and it's like, oh my God, it's people. And they like it. They really like it. And you could just feel this sort of weight on your shoulders, like it works. They not only like it, they love it. They go back into the queue. And if you've been on one of these game shows, you know that those queues, they're long. That's like, if you put yourself in a queue, you do that for a reason, because you're going to be there for a while. And that was such probably the greatest experience, I think. But then in general, one thing that has been very special for me on this project has been the team and the rallying and the passion that the team has. I think that is a rare thing. And I think it's something I hope other game development teams can also experience. This passion and working together towards a single goal and just automatically honing in on what's important. That is something that I feel super happy about. One of my favorite moments. And it's like an ongoing moment. That's the best part.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I just want to say, first of all, congrats and thank you so much for taking your time from your busy schedule to be here and to talk about Minecraft, man. I love the story. I love the early 3DS story. Yeah, that was really cool. And I can't wait for the future. I can't wait what type of new features and new content you have planned for the game. Hopefully later this year or in the future, man. So thank you so much for being here, man.
Thank you. And same, we can't wait either. I mean, we want to keep putting out interesting content and features, and just hope that players like it. Fingers crossed.
Definitely. All right, thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
All right.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
Thank you to the team over there for giving me the opportunity to do this interview. It was a lot of fun. And please, for those who are listening to this, make sure to hit me up, Danny@gamertagradio.com, or just hit me up on Twitter, Godfrey, GODFREE. Let me know your thoughts about the interview. And make sure to give this game a try. If you have Game Pass, check it out. You can also play this on PlayStation 4, 5, Nintendo Switch, PC, or even Xbox One. So make sure to check it out, and I can't wait for you guys to try it out. And if you can, hit me up so we can play. I need players, man. I need a team for us to play, man. So hit me up. We'll definitely make that happen, all right? Well, everybody, thank you for listening to episode 1106 here. This was your host, Danny. Until next time, I'm out. Peace.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.